Hello and welcome to PC Gamer Podcast number 306 for Thursday, February 23rd, 2012. I'm Evan Lottie, Senior Editor at PC Gamer, and I'm joined by Logan Decker, Editor-in-Chief of PC Gamer.
Hello.
Welcome back, Logan. Logan has just returned from a short leave of absence and may actually be a robot without us knowing.
Hello. Hello, I'm Logan.
Throughout the podcast, we'll be testing Logan in subtle, unnoticeable ways. I'm just going to write down here. Okay, Logan.
Pew, 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 pew.
Now there's just toasty-looking skeleton sitting in all the seats.
Okay. Shooting lasers, definite side of robot.
Pew, pew, yes.
But he didn't say hello world when I introduced him.
Oh, that's true.
Okay. You can play along by listening closely and warning us of Logan's potential
pew, pew.
Massacre of us all. Also at the table is Tyler Wilde, Associate Editor at PC Gamer.
Aloha.
Josh Augustine, Associate Editor at PC Gamer.
Ahoy.
And Gavin Townsley, Intern at PC Gamer.
Hello.
Hi, guys. All right, so a few cool news topics for us to talk about today that's going to spark some good discussion, I think. Mass Effect 3 DLC, we'll be talking about that, and just the concept of day one DLC as a scary phrase for PC gamers, potentially. And Josh is going to tell us about Guild Wars. Josh and Gavin are going to tell us about Guild Wars. They were in the beta last weekend.
We were.
It's like super exclusive.
All in that
friends
beta.
And family and celebrities. only like diplomats got in this beta. Yeah. Like Saudi princes were playing it. We'll also have a mention of Terraria being sort of, no more updates for Terraria and what that means and if that's an okay thing and what we expect of developers. That's kind of a good question right now. All right, so Mass Effect 3 is going to be released on March 6th. I think we're all looking forward to it. I've been playing the multiplayer beta a lot. We'll talk about that later in the podcast. And there's this, the day one DLC is going to be called From Ashes, and we don't really know the price right now. You know, if it's comparable to Mass Effect 2 DLC, it's going to be between $7 and $10. And there's been a lot of backlash, on forums, on Steam, on Twitter, of Mass Effect fans and enthusiasts like being really upset at EA releasing this day one DLC. And just to clarify what that's going to include, it's going to include a new squad mate. It's going to include a new adventure on actually an existing planet from elsewhere in the game. I won't mention it. It's kind of a small spoiler. A new weapon, and there's an alternate appearance for every existing squad mate. So you do get this automatically if you purchase the digital deluxe edition through Origin, which is like the $80 PC special edition. You get like an art book and all the special stuff. And Mass Effect's executive producer Casey Hudson, he's sort of the face of the game on Twitter and elsewhere in the community, has sort of responded to the fans' claims like, why should I pay more for a complete Mass Effect experience when I've already spent $60? Why is this content not in the full game? That's a lot of people's complaints. So again, the executive producer Casey Hudson has responded to this by saying, "Well, this actually helps us get the game out sooner, right? So he says it takes about 3 months from content complete to bug fix, certify, manufacture, ship game disc. So he's saying like they finished the game, and between the intervening period where they push the game out the door to be published, physically and otherwise, and get bug fixed, they make DLC. That's the time they have to work on DLC and produce this extra content, and they sell that. So." That's part of their argument, and I'm wondering how we feel about that as PC gamers, if we feel wronged in some way, if we feel like EA is just sort of pinching pennies, pinching every dollar and dime that they can out of us because they know we'll buy this, or a lot of people will.
I actually think Casey's explanation is kind of weird. I mean, it's actually makes this situation sound worse. I mean, it's not like when the game comes out, like, oh, we get it a month sooner, but we missed part of the game. What's he? I'm not really sure what he's trying to say, but the way I look at it is just I want to be able to play a game with a complete story. And if DLC is something that's sort of extrinsic to that story, if it's not really a part of the main story, then I don't really mind. I get why people are mad. I totally do. I really get it because it's like, it's just, it makes you feel like you're getting nickel and dimed and you're not really getting the complete experience unless you buy, the special edition, which I still think, considering how many times I'll probably play the game based on how many times I played Mass Effect 1 and 2, I still think is a pretty good deal. But, the DLC has never really been that great. Shadow Broker was good, but, whatever. But I just want the complete story. So if they want to add day one DLC that I can add it, I can buy for a few more bucks and probably wouldn't, I really don't see what the big deal is. But, you know, the way a company like Valve will do it is, you know, they would just give it away, right? Because it's good fan service. It makes fans feel good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But can EA really do that? I mean, I think we should ask ourselves that, because EA is a public company. You know, public companies are expected, not asked, expected. Your job is to make a return on that investment. And you have to do everything you can on the shareholders' behalf to make sure that you're making more money than you made the year before. So they're not really comparable companies. Valve is a private company. They don't have to prove to investors, we did everything we could to get you the best return on your dollar.
So does that mean that Valve is a better company for gamers then?
Yes, I would say so. Yeah. I believe that. I mean, it's a very loaded thing to say, because I think, you know, EA makes wonderful things. Obviously, I love the Mass Effect franchise and they do wonderful things with it. But they will, you know, they do these things because, not because they don't like fans or because they want to be mean, but because they have to get the best return on their dollar for investors.
No. Yeah.
And as long as I'm getting, you know, as long as I'm getting the complete experience on what they're selling me as, you know, the game itself, without the DLC, you know, I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah, I mean, that comparison to Valve and yeah, you see some of that reflected in Panarchia did an interview with Gabe Newell over the weekend, or the long Presidents' Day weekend, and he was basically saying, just reiterating their philosophy of, we simply want to make our customers happy. That's it. Like,
right.
Bottom line, Gabe Newell saying that, and they are, like you're saying, I think better positioned to do that more directly, where they can do these things with free DLC and free content updates, and you just look at Team Fortress 2, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if they had shareholders, the shareholders would be saying, this is a huge opportunity to make money. Yes, they're selling items, but why aren't you selling every update?
Exactly. WTF, man.
Yeah. Why aren't you, you know, doing these things that would give us more money, mm-hmm. that increase our investment, the value of our investment? So, Tyler, I know you're talking about this with Dan Stapleton a little bit, the Mass Effect 3 DLC last night.
Yeah, well, Dan Stapleton is an opinionated guy, and he just sort of came out on Twitter and said, the fans are reacting irrationally, they're being crazy. And, you know, I was sort of equivocating, because I don't think it's totally irrational, the reaction. It's overblown, but, you know, you can go with the point of view where it's like, EA is a company, they have every right to sell their games products however they like, and that's true. But the question is, should they do that? And, like, the biggest complaint from the fans is that it's not just a squadmate, it's a Prothean squadmate, which, if you know the story, is kind of a big deal. Maybe it won't be a big deal. You know, and you can make the argument that, well, the standard edition of the game will have tons of content, it'll be a full, complete game, and it'll be great. But at this point, people aren't just looking for the standard game with a lot of great content and it's worth the price. They're looking for the epic conclusion to a series they have invested time and money, and even more so than money, time, you know, becoming really invested in the story and these characters. And now they feel like, well, you're exploiting how much I love your series. I'm being exploited. So, you know, whether the whole, like, let's boycott EA forever thing is justified, I don't necessarily think so, but I can understand feeling a little hurt that, like, the price just got raised on your commitment to that story, and what you expect to pay is now $20 more. So I can understand why it would be frustrating for consumers who love this story. I can also understand why EA's got to pay the bills and make more money and impress the investors.
Yeah.
So I don't like have a strong stance one way or the other. I just sort of see both sides, and I get the anger coming out of the community, I think.
Mm-hmm. Kind of jumping in there, similar to kind of what Logan was saying, to me, the way I look at it is EA, like Tyler was saying too, is exploiting people's love of this franchise. But the fact is, if you're willing to pay for it, it's because you love this franchise so much that you're willing to pay this extra money.
Right.
And if you don't love it that much, don't pay the money. I mean, this is basically EA and all these developers are just doing what they can. They want to make as much money as they can. If you think what they're doing isn't right, don't buy it. I mean, it's one of those things that doesn't bother me. It would bother me if it was something like you got an alternate ending or something, like if it was something that big, but it's like an alternate squadmate, that's fine. There are other squadmates, and it's not like a squadmate that I'm already attached to, like, oh, you only get Rex or Grunt or something if you buy this DLC. It's something extra because they want to make money. They know you love this franchise more, maybe even more than any other franchise that they have. And so they're going to try and charge you more money. And if it's not worth that to you, don't buy it.
Why call it DLC, though? Why not just, it's already included in like the collector's editions and stuff, right? Why not just throw it in a collector's edition of the final Mass Effect and call it that? And then this huge issue wouldn't, I don't think it would be that big of a problem. You're paying
because
extra
someone
for
already,
a collector.
If someone already pre-ordered something that's not the collector's edition, they wouldn't have a chance to buy it?
Well, allow an upgrade feature, and then you get rid of all...
That's what this is. It's called DLC.
I know, but a DLC has the, to me at least, as a player, is like, this is extra content for your game, and you can buy it.
This is later, after you're done
playing after
the
you're
game,
done.
You can...
A month down the road, yeah, I expect to see DLC, but something that's released on day one, to me this just feels like, hey, if we don't put this as just a collector's edition of the game, but we call it DLC, think of the press we'll get because so many people will be a little bit upset that day one DLC is coming.
Well, I mean,
out.
They probably have
that's,
to wait.
That's what it feels like to
what
me.
What people will get more upset about, the word bonus or the word DLC. I mean, either way, this reaction was going to happen, I think. And I'm sure they planned for this reaction to happen, and they're going to, I don't know, weave through the web of tangled internet rage to figure out how to appease some people, but probably I don't think anything's going to change with the model.
But I don't want to dismiss, though, the people who are angry as whiners or part of the entitlement culture, because I totally get like how, you know, how you feel when you're a fan, you know, and I think there are some weird entitlement things that happen in gaming. Of course there are. I really feel this one is so much about that. I think it's about fans going, so what is the real like story? Am I getting the real story if I don't buy the DLC?
Yeah. I think it's
the whole story.
Yeah. I think it's less to do with the price of the transaction as it is like the fragmentation of the experience.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean it's the same reason that like moms get confused when their son tells them like, "I want an Xbox 360," and there are like four SKUs.
Right.
When they go into Best Buy, like, so the arcade edition without a hard drive, like, what is that? Does my son want that? You know, it's what is the definitive experience, and like, why is it being separated? There's it just creates a little bit of unsettling confusion.
Yeah,
I think.
And then they get the wrong one. I wish I'd never been born.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I mean, especially when it's the culmination of an epic story.
The conclusion. So everybody wants the definitive conclusion. They don't want to find out. Oh, but you didn't hear what the Prothean said, you know, because that actually adds a lot of backstory you didn't know about. And it probably won't be that. It'll probably be like he says some words now and then and like it's another squad mate. But people want the definitive thing. They want the big finale. And it's like with movies and
that's
things.
That's just not going to happen in games anymore, though.
No,
I mean, that's just not practical. I'm honestly with the people that are upset about this, but I'm not going to like shout about it. I'm just not going to buy it. I'm not interested in paying this money for it. It's not worth $10 to me, or even if it's $5, it's probably not worth $5 to me. I'm going to enjoy 99.9% of the game's content, and that's going to be the big deal to me. And this other stuff, I can just ask someone else who bought it or read on the forum, see what the Prothean said.
Logan, if you would not have played any of the Mass Effect 2 DLC, would you have still have been happy, you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm. In fact, I really, even the DLC that I liked was still, it wasn't part of the whole. Yeah. And the whole is what I love, right? The individual missions in Mass Effect were not always all that great. You know, they were very uneven, but it didn't matter because it all drove you toward the climax. It drove you toward the story. It got you into these characters that were so important to you. So I really just, the DLC was very, very forgettable for me.
I think that's really what people want to know with this. Is this Prothean thing, is this part of the whole, or is this like DLC where it's just another couple side missions that vaguely relate to the whole?
But the rage, you know, that some people feel, I actually think is to EA's credit. Because let me tell you, I love this series so much, if they priced it at $150, I would have been furious and I would have paid it, I guarantee you. And the reason I would have paid it is because, like, that's their reward for doing great work. They invented a new franchise, and they made it a quality game, and they maintained the quality through the second one. Of course, I will pay through the nose to find out how this ends because I love it that much. They earned that money. And so the fact that it's priced at, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, I'll be able to get it as an editor, but I would have paid easily $150.
Hypothetically, just say that trend escalates. Don't you think there could be a backlash of cynicism where people are like, I'm not going to get invested in any more stories or series because come the end of the trilogy, they're going to charge me $120 because they know I'm invested. So you know what? I'm not even going to play those games anymore.
Sure.
I just wonder if people, like, it is their reward for making something great to charge what people will pay for it economically, supply and demand. Yeah. There's a huge demand for Mass Effect. But then I would just wonder if people will get more and more cynical
They will, but I think that's driven by console sales, because as a PC gamer, you know what? I could spend the whole year playing nothing but games for free. So they face a price pressure on the PC side that they wouldn't on the console side, because almost nothing's free on the consoles.
Except that's, you missed the flaw in my argument, which is that gamers could get more cynical than they are now.
All right, on that note, I guess you know, we'd love to hear your guys' comments, or if you feel passionately or dispassionately about this. As always, it's pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. Send us an MP3. Or if you want to send a letter about it, it's letters@pcgamer.com. Or if you want to send us a phone call to be played on the podcast, it's 877-404-1337, extension 724. I need to take another breath.
Nice. I was waiting for you to mess up that number. You got it.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Thank you. So kind of under a similar umbrella of developer decisions and you know, minor backlash. I don't know. I hate to put it under that umbrella. But Terraria, which is a fantastic sort of 2D dungeon crawler, crafting, digging, mining, exploration, 2D Minecraft. People call it that.
Yeah.
I like how long you avoided saying 2D Minecraft. 2D. There's mining. There's crafting.
Yeah, exactly. So if you guys remember, that came out in May 16, 2011. So it's not quite a year old yet. And developers are saying that they're done developing. Done developing Terraria, done with updates. There have been a lot of updates since it came out. And I'm quoting one developers here in a news post on PC Gamer, saying that, "I have learned a lot from working on Terraria and planned on using what I've learned, building upon it, and moving forward with another even better project." He's also about to have a kid. So
maybe that is the
problem. I almost thought you said kitten. I was like, oh, how cute.
Well. A kid. Maybe I meant a goat. Maybe he meant a goat. a youthful goat is a kid. So I guess I just wanted to raise this as a way of talking about, like, this interesting, this new sort of, not entitlement, but like, especially these types of games that are open world, that are very modular. I mean, Minecraft is obviously a great example where you can just constantly add these new things, new features, new lighting technology, new mobs, new areas. They added a hell world where you can develop it forever. When's the right time for a developer to stop? And like, how responsible are they to gamers? And in the case of Terraria, did they do enough? Did they provide enough content for the, I think it's $10 now? Was it like 20 when it came out?
Yeah, and I it's constantly been on sale since it came out too.
Yeah, so it was like $2 a couple times, I'm pretty sure. So
$5 a lot of times. So
I guess I'm curious to get a sense of like your guys' expectations and like if we expect too much and if it's fair for developers to sort of step away at some point and be like, I can't give my life to this game anymore.
You know, I think it is fair. I'm a little upset to hear that Terraria is not going to be developed further, but it also kind of reached its peak. A lot of the new developer side updates have been, not to be too negative, but almost rehashed content. It is new, but it's just a new type of ore you have to mine to, or a new set of armor.
Yeah.
And so it felt kind of repetitive to me. But I think everyone should be able to, you know, walk away from a project. This is the one thing that I ask. In a creativity, like, sandbox-type game like Minecraft or Terraria, give the community the tools to continue it on themselves. And Terraria, it has done that.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's tons of custom maps on Curse and stuff. So I think they have the tools to continue the game if they want. And that, you know, Bon Voyage, developers, make us another good title. Thank you for leaving us that.
Yeah, I think that kind of reflects our sentiment.
Yeah.
Leave us with the tools to build ourselves.
Absolutely.
And when you buy a game, you probably know something about the developer, unless it's their first game. And so you have an idea whether this is a developer, say it's Valve. I know they're going to keep updating it. But you still are only entitled to the game you bought at that time. Everything after that is them being really great to their customers, and that's fantastic. And that'll make you love them like Valve for life. It'll make you a fan. But they don't have to do that. And so getting upset if an indie developer says, I want to go do other stuff now, you know. And like Gavin said, I think that was the best point. Just give people the tools then to keep playing with it.
Yeah. The only time that I ever feel like I'm entitled to updates is if I'm paying a monthly subscription. Mm-hmm. And so if it's not a subscription game, I mean, the developer, I mean, just think back like 10 years ago. It was not news that people stopped developing games after they released them. Like this would have been so commonplace. But now it's great. You know, more and more developers are doing it because they see the success of companies like Valve that are building great loyalty. So it's great that they're doing it. But I mean, by all means, after a year, take some time off, work on the next big Terraria.
And something new that I'm seeing happen, we kind of have seen it with Dino D-Day, is that rather than releasing a game and maybe it doesn't do very well and the critical reception isn't great, in the past that would have been like, darn, you know, that project didn't go well.
Yeah, see you in 2 years.
But now they realize we've already put so much work into this, we can make it better and people will give us another try if we're honest with them and we work hard to improve the game. Like, if our first impression wasn't as good as we wanted it to be, we can still win people back. It's not as cut and dry as like, oh, you released a game and it just wasn't successful, bye. So I think that's cool. That's great for developers that they can now do that. They can.
Yeah,
I agree with that. Unless you're an MMO company, then you burn.
Well, because you spent $60 million
yeah.
to put it out. But if you're an indie developer, you can release something that some bugs, but then, you know, people will give you a chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of times I hear a lot of developers time out. They're providing gamers with service, not games now. Like, League of Legends is a service. It's not a game. And that's why they're doing these, like, monthly updates and stuff like that. And that makes a lot of sense to me because, along with Tyler's thing, they don't want to release a game and then just put it out there, have it die. Like, it's a service. You're buying into Riot Games service, or you're buying into Dino D-Day service.
Mm-hmm.
But if they want to take a step off, like Evan said, give it to the users. Let us serve it. Well, I don't want to say that.
I was just going to say, does that mean we're being serviced when we play a game?
You got served.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd rather them leave too early than overstay their welcome. Yeah. I mean,
sure.
I wanted a new Indiana Jones movie for how long? And now I'm like, so sorry. Why didn't you stop when you were...
I was looking for somebody to blame for that.
Yeah, well, when I still had fond memories, why, so...
Let's avoid that.
Yes.
Let's avoid that in the case of Half-Life, for example.
Yes. So Fear, Fear 3.
Oh, goodness. Exactly.
Yeah.
Man. So this is the part of the podcast where I say, Josh and Gavin, you guys played some Guild Wars 2.
Yes, we did.
Like a couple days of it.
Yeah.
And that's significant. And people are apparently like really crazy about this game and not just MMO players. So I'd love to have you just talk about what was included in the beta first and like what you played and what level you hit, what content you were involved in, and just some general impressions. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So just some ground stuff. You played through the starting area of the Human, Char, and Norn, three of the five races in the game. It was one full weekend. You could play. Your characters wouldn't be wiped. Whatever you wanted to do, that was cool. So I played a Norn Mesmer, which is one of the classes. All the classes were available in the game as well. There was also one level 30 dungeon. So it's the first dungeon in the game, five-person dungeon called Ascalon Catacombs, where... readers of the magazine will remember we actually revealed for the first time probably like 9 months ago now, maybe a year ago. So we got to finally play that. So, yeah, I mean, Gavin, do you want to give your impressions first?
First big lore hit for the Guild Wars fans in Ascalon Catacombs. It was a great instance. It was a really good time. It's minor disappointments for me, but overall a really fun experience, and I think people really like it. I really enjoyed the Warrior class, which was surprising to me. In the first Guild Wars, I hated Warrior because I had to jump around so much and follow things that were running around with their weird aggro table. And it just wasn't really satisfying, but in this version, the Warrior was probably one of the favorites I tried. In fact, it kept me away from my standard Archer Rogue for the entire beta, and that never happens to me with Warriors. So
yeah, we did a big Q&A on the website, and one of the first questions we got was like, can you jump?
Yes.
The first game was terrific, but there was no jumping. Movement was really restricted, and that's one thing that's really, really improved, and you don't get a sense of that until you play it, because you can move freely. There's no like invisible walls blocking you from jumping anywhere. A lot of the abilities, like the Thief, I just love. Your abilities, it reminds me a little bit of Dragon Age 2's Rogue, where, let's not get crazy with comparing it to Dragon Age 2. But just in the sense, like, you activate an ability, and it moves your character in a very kind of nimble way, and then attacks. So you don't have to, like, try and circle strafe around somebody. Like, one of your abilities is you leap over your target, spin around in a circle with your weapons out, and land behind them. And while you're doing that, you're invulnerable.
So it's a really good timing where if you see someone coming to attack you, you can time your evasion moves, jumping around them, behind them, stabbing. And another one, like your character automatically sidesteps them and jabs them in the side and then sidesteps back. Mm-hmm. And it just makes it, first of all, it looks really cool, but it feels really fluid where you're focused more on like the timing and countering rather than specifically trying to position yourself in, you know, a slim 40-degree angle.
Sure. Yep. So after you came back from playing the beta, I asked you if you thought this was going to be the best MMO of 2012, and you sort of misheard me. You're like, oh, did you say best game or best MMO? And I was like, well, either. I don't know. And I'm curious if you feel that way right now and why, I guess. If you can sort of bullet point out, like, it's Guild Wars has this and this and this, if for somebody that maybe isn't familiar with the series. Yeah,
absolutely. I think it's definitely going to be the best MMO of 2012. To be fair, there's not a whole lot of big competition. Secret World is the other one coming out. I played both of them within, like, 3 days of each other.
Right.
And I enjoyed Guild Wars a whole lot more. So Guild Wars 2, the biggest things about it, obviously no monthly sub. You buy it once and you're set. There is going to be some sort of microtransactions, but we don't know what that means yet. There's so much content. The game is gorgeous. For me personally, I love the PvP. I'm a PvP player, and in Guild Wars 2, the way it works, after you beat the tutorial quest, which takes about 3 minutes, you can enter the PvP area, and that auto-levels you to max level, gives you a full set of PvP gear, and gives you access to all of your skills. And so you're playing in this PvP area that is perfectly balanced. The matchmaking system is basically just like an online shooter, where there's a server list, and you see what maps they're running, how many people are in there, you can go in and out of them at will. It's incredible. And the world v. world. Oh my gosh. It's everything I've wanted from like MMO PvP. It's amazing.
Okay. So the world v. world is separate from this PvP.
It is.
Arena style PvP.
Yes.
That you're talking about.
Yeah. So I don't know if they have an official name, but it's basically kind of like capture point maps and stuff like that for the instant stuff, deathmatch, okay. PvP, that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But this world v. world is a separate area. It's basically, it's not a clone of the world, but it's a mini world in itself, where everything is capturable. You can take keeps, you can take castles, there are supplies, there are all this sort of stuff. And it's three servers on this giant, like, triangle-shaped map. And anyone...
Four.
Oh, four.
There are four lands.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes. There are four separate...
Continents?
Yeah, yes. Four continents. Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. And each of them, so there's three servers fighting for control of this area. And as many people as want to be there can. So you can have hundreds versus hundreds of players trying to capture, and capturing keeps, you do it by, you get supplies, and then you build siege weapons to lay siege to the castle, and you break down the doors while the enemy players are trying to defend it. If you take it, you get benefits that go to everyone on your server that, you know, make you level up faster, get influence faster, get that sort of stuff.
Hmm.
But just the awesome dynamic part, Evan, I was just reading your PlanetSide 2 cover story, where you're talking about PlanetSide 2 has the same idea, where it's just this massive world that anyone can capture stuff. And I just love the idea, you brought this up in your cover story, of like organized bands of like a guild of people being like, we are the night shift for guarding this tower.
Totally.
And
totally.
Like, that's what they're going to do. They're going to be defending that tower, and they'll be sending out calls for help, and people are just going to funnel in. If there's a raid, like, everyone's just going to flock there and go at it. I could honestly, if I said this in our Q&A, if that was the only part of Guild Wars, if there was no other PvE content, if it was just that, I would still buy it. I would pay them twice the cost of the game.
Wow. Like,
it's exactly what I've wanted. And obviously, I played it, and I probably saw a max of like 100 people at a time because it was on the beta server.
Right.
So it remains to be seen, like, if it can handle the stress of a lot of people. So that is one.
Yeah. If one area is under attack and like suddenly hundreds of people swarm there, how is it going to handle that? Yeah. EVE Online has had that issue.
Yes.
In the past.
Absolutely. And Warhammer Online, which had a similar kind of take other people's cities.
RVR. Yeah.
Yeah. Had that same problem. So I don't know if that is, but assuming that they can find a technical way to solve that problem, I'm going to be in love. But Gavin, what did you think?
World v. World, what I love about it is it's the first, at least in my eyes, viable compromise between PvE players and PvP players. World PvP players, I should say. You can have all of the joy and love that you have of world PvP in a completely separate area from what you do in your PvE time. You want to craft, you want to gather. That's not interrupted by some guy who's just like, I want to take my high levels and come jack your character just so I can laugh about it. it won't happen anymore. Now you have this separate area where you can go to expect that. And it's big enough that it feels like world PvP, which is, for other PvPers out there, they just know it's different than that instant stuff. It's just so much more real yeah. and better.
If you had to guess, how long do you think it would take you to run around just one of those four continents?
If I'm doing a full circle around one of them, I would say it would easily take me 15 minutes, and maybe more.
And if you had to visit every single keep or castle or mine, it would take hours.
Yeah.
And that's just one of four of them.
Yeah, there's just no way. I mean, if for anyone out there who knows what Winter Grasp is, that it's about, I would say, like 15, 20 times the size.
Yeah, one of the four
areas. Yeah. So actually, my biggest complaint about World v. World is the fact that it makes my death so painful, because if we don't have keeps on the way, I have to run back, and it's just like, oh, no!
Yeah. And going back into the game in general, like, just some really quality of life stuff that just makes MMOs more palatable for everyone, because you mentioned earlier, like, a lot of non-MMO gamers are excited about this. My brother, who I can't get to play any MMOs with me, loved the original Guild Wars.
Mm-hmm.
It attracted a lot of people because there wasn't a subscription fee. You pay $50, you're in, you're good for life. And they've just done a lot to just make it easier. Like, oh, what's a really annoying part about MMOs? Like, getting ganked by really high-level people or stumbling into content that you can't face. And in this, wherever you go, your level is changed to match the content there. So if you're a level 50, you go back and you realize you missed the Ascalon Catacombs, the level 30 dungeon.
Yeah.
You run back. When you go in there, you have the stats of a level 30 character. You have all your same skills and all that, but it levels you down so that everything is a challenge. It reminds me of what Skyrim does, essentially, where no matter where you go, what you're discovering, like, it's still going to be an equal challenge to your level. Isn't that accurate?
I'm not sure. I actually think they took some of that out in Skyrim. That was the case in Oblivion.
In Oblivion,
for sure,
apologies.
Where there's, like, very aggressive scaling, where your max level in a mountain lion is still, like, giving you guff.
Yeah. So
okay. That's all really reassuring. Cool.
Yeah, to touch on that, I would not directly compare it, because there's so many negative connotations with Oblivion in that regard. But this is actually a very interesting system that never makes you feel underpowered, but gives a whole lot of meaning to every experience you have in PvE. I mean, a level 12 boar is going to give me just as meaningful of a fight as, you know, a level 50, giant ogre, which is really cool.
Yeah. I will say, just to temper our excitement a little bit, a lot of the hype around Guild Wars 2 is centered on the event system and kind of this idea that there are no quests, things are happening in the world, and you just go out there and change the world. Mm-hmm. Like, if you take a castle and drive centaurs out, they'll go set up a camp somewhere, and then they'll launch a counterattack on you and stuff like that. And Gavin and I really didn't experience that. We played up through level 15 in the human and Norn areas, and I think we found maybe one or two where what you did actually changed the world.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times there would be an event in the sense that, okay, you go into a cave, steal a bunch of stuff, and then after that, the people in the cave will come attack you and try and get it back. And if you beat them, their boss will come out, and then you take them out. But it doesn't change the world. It's not like you stole stuff, so then that cave crumbles and the people move and go somewhere else. So I wasn't necessarily excited for Guild Wars 2 for the reasons that I thought I was.
Sure.
I thought I was going to love that dynamicness, the events, and it just felt like a quest system that you have to explore to find the quests.
Okay.
Yeah, it was definitely the most disappointing part, I think, of the entire beta, but that didn't make the beta disappointing.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could go this far, but I would say that Rift has better dynamic content to me. But Guild Wars 2 does have the most organic level experience I've ever played. It's amazing.
Yeah, you can go anywhere just real fast, how the events work is you get these, what would be the equivalent of quests in other games, by approaching an area. And all of a sudden it pops up and says, there is a giant brood mother like dragon over there. You should probably kill it. And then you can choose, do you want to go do it, do you not? If you don't, you just move on. But those are stuff like, if you kill the dragon will be gone for a while, and then it'll pop up later, and if you happen to be in the area, it'll warn you. So you can basically, to level, you just go out.
And explore.
Yeah, go wherever you want to go, and then there'll be stuff nearby that tells you. oh, okay, hey, you're new here. There's stuff over here. Come do this. And so there's a lot of really cool moments where you just see, like, a mountain in the distance. You're like, I'm going to go up that mountain. And then you get to the mountain, you find at the top of the mountain there's something going on, and you can help participate. Hmm. And that's where the auto kind of balancing of your level or whatever helps a lot, because you aren't forced to go down a specific path. You just go wherever, and it's going to make sure that you can play wherever you are.
Very exciting. Cool. Well, thanks for breaking down sort of the basis of the appeal for you guys, and really excited you got to spend some time in the beta. So, I mean, again, it's like, it's a hard game for me to follow because, like, the headlines I see, they are very, like, coded in MMO language for me. It's like RVR, like, World v. World, new class, something about lore, and it's just like, oh, I know it's exciting, but I'm not going to, like, I don't necessarily read that. It's just like, what is it? Like, those headlines are not for me, sort of, as a non-MMO player. But that's all very exciting. Thanks for breaking that down, guys. So, last week we mentioned Amnesia. And this sort of teaser website that the guys at Frictional Games put up, the developers of Amnesia, for their next game. Well, that finally got confirmed. We wanted to sort of update you guys on that. Really exciting stuff. And so the game name, it's like one of the funniest game names I've heard in a while. The sequel, which is going to be out this year, which is very encouraging, is going to be called Amnesia, A Machine for Pigs.
All right.
Just going to allow you guys to take that in for a moment. So.
So does that mean it's not meant for me?
I want to see a machine of pigs.
Oh, made of pigs.
Imagine like pig cogs and pig chains.
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
You know, little snouts just turning around.
Pig levers, yes.
So why does it have that name? So the premise, as it's sort of been revealed so far, it's not going to continue the same story. It's set in 1899 when a wealthy industrialist named Oswald Mandus, love the name Oswald, returns home from Mexico and lapses into a months-long coma, during which he dreams of a terrifying machine. So when he wakes from that coma...
He shouldn't have drank the water.
the machine is real, and presumably what follows is an entirely pleasant experience in which no one is dismembered, ever. Ever. That would not happen. That would be ridiculous.
Yeah.
So more scares, and I think like the most interesting part of this announcement, this is sort of rumored, I think they sort of made a small ARG about this, is that, this is actually what we hinted at last week. When you clicked on that teaser website, it actually linked to China, like Google Maps China. Mm-hmm. They're going to be collaborating with the guys that made Dear Esther.
AKA the Chinese Room.
Exactly. That's the name of their developer. So really cool
I've been playing some Dear Esther,
there.
And it's very cool and mm-hmm. very Amnesia-esque, except without sort of the same horror elements
exactly.
as much.
Yeah, so I think that can only go well, and just so relieved that's coming out this year, and
absolutely.
It doesn't get delayed.
But Dear Esther is creepy in its own way. Mm-hmm. Like, I found myself like, I know nothing's going to jump out from behind me, but like, this is a very surreal environment. So,
and it's also a prettier game than Amnesia. I mean, it's certainly built on better technology. So hopefully they can sort of find ways of taking each other's good things and make a better thing.
There is nothing here. But stuff to be excited about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like they could have done Amnesia 2. Why not? Mm-hmm. It was well reviewed. It was well regarded. I would have played it, you know, and they could have gone and done another game that put the focus back on them, you know, and to develop their studio. But instead, then they go into cahoots with some other developers to create something new and different and get that cross-pollination.
Kind of a competitor, arguably.
There is nothing to be but stuff to be excited about here.
And it's
That's
called
fantastic.
A machine for pigs.
And it's called a machine for pigs, you know?
Maybe that's a commentary about us. Maybe we're the pigs.
Wouldn't that be great if it came with plastic hooves that you had to put over your hands and work the controls that way on the keyboard? It's like, oink, 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 oink.
Wow. And throughout the game, you're actually like slowly polymorphing into a pig.
Yeah, you go to take the hooves off after you're done playing.
Doesn't work.
Won't come.
How indie is that? They don't come off. That's independent games. Wow. You know what I mean?
All right, so as we ponder that horrific vision of independent development and ourselves, our very bodies being transformed by the power therein, I want to ask you guys what you've been playing this week and last week and what you're going to be playing this weekend. Josh, how about you go first?
Yeah. I've been playing The Old Republic a bunch. I started a new character, and I'm finally up to level 30 on that character now. So I'm trying to hit 50 because the Guild Summit is coming up. They're having the Guild Summit where they're bringing a bunch of guild leaders to Austin. I'm going there for that, and I don't want to look like an idiot and not have a level 50 character. So I'm powering through to finally get this character to level 50 in time. And then I've also been obsessed with World of Warcraft's Holiday events. I just love holiday events. I now have a Swift Love Strider, which is a large pink ostrich that I can ride around on is for Valentine's Day. And
Swift Love Strider.
I spent hours getting that Swift Love Strider.
Get it's me the t-shirt. Stat.
The orc porn name.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's about it.
Fantastic. Tyler, how about yourself?
I've been playing a lot of Tribes Ascent,
yeah.
And it should be an open beta as you hear this. Mm-hmm. So you can go sign up if you're not already in. And they just added Arena Deathmatch, which is really fun. It's 5v5, small arenas you can see and sort of jetpack to the other side almost of the map. They're not that small, but they're multi-tiered. You can fall off. And it's I can't play as the Sentinel, which is my favorite class, because it doesn't really work for a sniper, but it's given me a chance to, like, oh, I have fun as a soldier, too, and it's just really fast-paced, and I don't know, really fun. I mean, I still like playing CTF, but I'm enjoying it as just something different. It's sort of a little bit like Unreal Tournament 2K4-ish in the way the levels, you know, sort of the aesthetic of them and just the speed. It's really fun. Gavin, you played any of it?
On that note, I'm kind of feeling ill. I think I'm going to go home early.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, I won't be in Tribes.
You look fine.
And download that.
I got a fever, and the only case or cure is
let's
more
cut
juggernaut.
His fingers off.
Okay, more you juggernaut. That's the thing. I have actually only seen like the nimbler classes playing deathmatch, so I'd be interested to see how well a juggernaut does.
I'm just going
to
sit on my own mortars.
Yeah, you really do have to move around because they're just five people shooting spin fuser discs at you, but I'd like to see that.
I have not been in it myself, but that sounds really exciting. So
there's
I guess that's
two
on my list.
Maps right
that's
now.
All.
So I'm curious because I really liked, I don't remember the name, I'm sorry, the melee class where you can like stealth and melee people.
Infiltrator.
I really want to play that, but it seems impossible to play a melee character in that game with jetpacks and all that sort of stuff. Is that still true with the new class system?
I've been meleeed, but mostly because I camp and snipe because I'm a jerk, so it's easy to sneak up on me. I have played some Infiltrator, but I don't think I ever personally had a lot of luck meleeing anyone.
Yeah, I'd imagine you'd look like a crazy guy fighting off an invisible bee.
You're running around. Like, well, it's these massive, massive levels, and people are flying around, so it's trying to chase them down and hit them with something.
It's incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
You can't be a regular part of the flowing action, but you have a really great role in the sense that you're on the outskirts of the map, picking off the Sentinels, picking off the Juggernauts and the heavy classes. Your goal is to find those periods of time when people aren't moving. As soon as you learn that, it actually becomes a really intense class.
People do stand on their flag platform still quite often because they're trying to body block. So if you can sneak up there and not even worry about taking the flag, you might be able to completely disrupt their defense. But I'm not saying that strategy has ever successfully worked for me.
But maybe this time
maybe
it will
this
be.
Time.
I just want to see you do it over and over.
Or you can run into their base as the infiltrator and mess up that their generator.
Like, I've had a lot of fun playing defense on my own generator.
Really? Yeah.
So you can kind of stay stealth nearby. Because people, they look around, no one's there, okay, just stand there, shoot it.
People undervalue that so much, I think. Like, losing your generator, especially me when I play sniper, like, I need to reload ammo all the time. I'm always running out. And when our generator's down, I'm like, God, nobody's defending. Okay. And then I switch to the technician class and go in there. And there's like five enemies just standing around in there with no one challenging them. I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah, they're loitering.
This is such they playing some cards and just like.
You might want to get back into the game because the class has changed a bit with the new addition to like Stealth Spin Fuser. And I think they also have like almost Claymore-like mines that they can throw down, too, that help with defense and offense a lot.
I dig it.
They're like sticky mines. You can throw them on people, and they're just... So, yeah, it's beefed up a bit.
Exciting stuff, again, going into open beta by the time you hear this on Friday. Terrific. And Logan, what's in front of you, in front of your monitor these days?
Yes, well, I mean, as you think you mentioned it before, I've been out. I had to have a surgery on my spine, and by the way, you can see my exposed spine.
<Gross. laughs>
If you go to my Twitter feed, I think when was the surgery? I think it was on the. I tweeted it like
a half ago.
This is maybe this is podcast deal soon.
Sometime, yeah, exactly. Sometime between like February 7th and 10th, if you look on my Twitter feed, you will find a link to pictures of my exposed spine because I made the doctor take pictures. I made them promise. I was fighting off the anesthesia mask until they promised that they would take pictures. And they're like, fine, fine, whatever. So they gave me the pictures. And yeah, so you can see my spine on my Twitter feed. That is your podcast DLC.
I sat there for 3 minutes deciding whether or not to click that. I was like, I really want to know what it looks like. But that's probably really gross.
But did you look at it?
No, I didn't. I closed it.
I really can't tell what's going on in there. It just looks
you
like
have an answer, though. If anyone ever says you're spineless, you'll say,
yeah.
Well, here it is.
It just looks like this pulpy mess, you know, and I'm not really sure what's going on in there. And if I'd seen it in a movie, I would have said the
well,
effects
now,
were pretty
now
cheap.
Your spine's a pulpy mess, so I don't know if that's yeah, your you case.
So, yeah, so I got sent home, and I thought, oh, this is amazing because I can play all these games, you know, finally. And but just as a, you know, for instance, when the Mass Effect 3 demo came out, I was on all these painkillers, right? And so I'm out there, and when they first start shooting at me, I'm like, oh, yeah. And then all of a sudden the screen started turning like red and I realized that I had forgotten to shoot. Because I was just thinking, why isn't Shepard shooting?
Why are they fighting?
You guys
what
are
is
so
the deal
awesome,
here?
Man.
And this, you know, the red thing started coming to the from the edges of the screen. I'm like, what the
why are like
and I'm like
but
oh.
I had to go on
because I realized my finger wasn't like shooting and I was like okay so maybe this isn't gonna work out. So I played a lot of adventure games.
Oh
which,
good.
You nice. Know, which is great. It was very you know because
half hour yeah. between clicks.
Exactly. You know?
Everything occurred to you perfectly. You're like, oh, the banana goes.
Yeah, you get to see all the cute animations
the
when you don't do anything.
Sense.
You know. but it was great because I got to finally finish, you know, some games I've been meaning to, like To the Moon. Oh my God.
Yeah. I've heard it's quite sad.
Oh Lord.
Am I gonna cry?
Yeah, unless you're a robot like me. No. pew pew pew. Ah, everybody. Ah, pew pew pew
no.
pew pew. Loom is a great little stop action adventure game. It's L-U-M-E, not, you know, L-O-O-M, which was way back when, that you should definitely check out. It's on Steam. Another new chapter of The Dream Machine, which is exceptional. Wonderful writing in this. And, you know, I mean, good, like, realistic conversation between people is very rare in adventure games, you know, because usually it's a fantastic setting or whatever. And this is just very believable, very surreal, imaginative game. Wonderfully done. But I have to say, you know, I did, you know, when I was being killed in the Mass Effect demo at 2560 by 1600, oh, my God.
It's a shiny game. It's very shiny.
Oh, my God. I am, like... I heard this expression a few months ago. I was NP hard, you know? It was like, so, it was that amazing. It was incredible. And admittedly, I have a pretty fast system, but it was buttery smooth.
Yeah.
You know, pushing flawless 60 frames per second. I was very, very, very pleased. I tweeted a couple screenshots, like what I could muster, you know? And it's just beautiful that level of detail. So
yeah.
Oh man, I can't wait.
I don't like to play up the whole, you know, PC elitism angle too much, but I do like when people are talking about HD and like 1080p and yeah, things like that. I'm like, I'm playing at 1600p. Is that okay? Like, is that all right? I've been doing that for like 2 years. Is that all right? Whoops. I have all the P's.
That's cute.
Yeah.
1080p. Yeah.
It's barely four digits.
Yeah. As we twirl our canes. God, we're terrible. Yeah, Mass Effect 3 demo. So unlike you, I've been playing it, but only the multiplayer. Which is totally surprisingly good.
Right.
Whoa. So if you guys didn't know, like, Mass Effect 3 multiplayer kind of came out of nowhere. I don't think it was, like, covered. There weren't really a lot of opportunities to cover it. So I didn't know a lot about it before playing it, actually. And it's a wave-based survival mode. So four-player co-op, wave-based survival mode. You're not playing as characters from the game. You're playing as just sort of generic, like, I'm a Quarian, and there's all the... Krogan, and there's all the existing character class, like Sentinel, Soldier, Infiltrator is one. There's an Engineer class. So there's, you know, different classes to play with, like any other shooter. And it works really well. I mean, it's, I think part of it is sort of owed to the way the rewards are structured. So you're not necessarily, you do upgrade your character just as you do in Mass Effect. You have that same, like, character menu screen where you're investing points in specific abilities. And there's, like, sort of two passive trees, like, you know, they're not even trees, they're just lines. So you have, like, your incinerate power. You have like an engineer has like a combat drone you can deploy that like flies around and sort of shoots enemies by itself, or has a flamethrower that you can upgrade. But in terms of your equipment, like you don't get a better assault rifle by using an assault rifle. You simply like earn credits by winning. So first of all, there's like different tiers. There's 10 waves, and you can play in like bronze, silver, or gold. That's the difficulty level. I just played gold for the first time last night. We died on me, Norman Chan, and I, one of our other roommates. We died on wave 10. It's like really hard. But you get these credits, and you can spend. And I think this is like a really simple but smart, not innovation, but just like way of structuring things. You buy these kits. So there's like two tiers of kits. There's like a recruit kit and a veteran kit. When you buy one, it's like a crate filled with loot, basically. So you get like you get some consumable items. You get like rockets, which can be used to take down giant mechs that attack you. You get like special ammo upgrades that you can use once per mission. So you might get like incendiary ammo or warp ammo, which I think goes through shields. But you also get weapon upgrades and like, you know, scopes and recoil dampeners and things like that, and new assault rifles, new pistols, new SMGs, new shotguns. So it's kind of a nice way of like, you get money and then you randomly get stuff. It feels kind of like a slot machine. You like put a token into and you get some sort of reward. But other than that, like the cover system works really well. The enemies have tons of HP, and I think like just the mechanic of them being shielded and then having health underneath that like really works. They just soak up clips and clips of ammunition, like at gold difficulty. You know, there's different tiers of enemies. There's like a sniper, there's like a cloaker that'll come and stab you. They're just generic soldiers. There's guys that place turrets, so kind of like you'd expect in like a tower defense game or something comparable, some kind of wave-based survival mode. And I mean, just one of these guys, it'll take you and your friends like a couple clips each just to bring one down.
Wow.
And again, that's the high difficulty, but it's satisfying. Like, okay, like it's just like this you know, unlike something like Left 4 Dead, where you see a zombie, you just shoot a zombie, it's down. It's like, okay, I got shields down. Okay, now I can use a specific power that's designed to damage their health, and then I can focus on this guy. He deployed a turret. I need to get his shields down before I can attack its armor. It works really well. The pacing is terrific. It's, you know, 20-minute matches or something like that to complete, and I think a lot of people are going to play this.
Yeah.
I'm crazy about it.
I'm ashamed to say that, you know, I mean, I always try to assume the best unless proven wrong, but you know, I heard about Mass Effect 3 multiplayer, I'm like, well, whatever. Yeah. You know, go ahead, staple it on, we'll just sort of ignore it. And I mean, what little I played with it, oh my god, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely not a tie-in or whatever.
Oh, just something they're fantastic
bringing. I mean, like, just like the one thing I can probably use to sell you guys, so there are sniper rifles, you know, like in single player, they operate the same way. Sorry.
You sold me. Done.
Oh yeah, you like those. But so there are enemy types with big riot shields, and you know, hey, if you shoot them in the front, they barely take any damage. It's like blocking in a fighting game. Like they just take little chips of damage. But if you have a sniper rifle, so okay, two ways of killing these guys, just to like give you guys some sense of like the tactics and how fun this is. As an engineer, I can spawn my turret behind him. I can just sort of like cast that as a spell, and it appears right behind them, and it'll attack him. And then that guy will turn around and I'll shoot him in the back. Pretty simple, right? But as a sniper, they have a little eye slit in the shield in front, right? It's just like the right amount of difficulty of like balancing the recoil and like the weapon stability and like timing it. The guy with the shield might get hit by one of my friends, and he might stumble, and that sort of throw me off. But if I can shoot through that shield, it's an instant kill headshot. And that's saving me like 20 seconds of and all this ammo and like all this effort. And it just feels like, you know, it's like, I don't know, Luke Skywalker firing into the Death Star. It's like over and over again. It's that kind of like feeling of finesse and timing and execution. Super fun. It's free on Origin. Just go download this thing. It's
yeah,
only a couple gigs.
Just
like,
try it. I mean,
play with your friends. I mean, go get it now, please. All right, so that about wraps up for this week, guys. Sorry we didn't get a chance to play any questions this week, but again, if you want to send us questions, please do. If you want to send them via email, please send them as an MP3, not as text. It's pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com, or you can call us very easily and leave a question under 60 seconds to this number, 877-404-1337, extension 724. All right, one closing note. I want to mention there's some cool StarCraft going on this weekend if you guys like watching that. There's the Winter Arena being held by MLG Major League Gaming. Just go to mlgpro.com and check that out. Being held in New York all this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I believe. All right, on behalf of PC Gamer, I'm
Actually, you know, yeah. Just in case you want to see the exposed spine, I will retweet the link to the image. Today is February 23rd, so check for a tweet around 4 p.m. February 23rd, and I'll read, you can see a spine. It's pretty amazing. I'm at Logan Decker, all one word, on Twitter.
If you're in a science class, I mean, you can probably count that as extra credit or
something. Seriously, right. I mean,
biology.
And if you're not following me on Twitter, you are missing the party of a lifetime. So I just want to let you know that.
I'd say. On behalf of Logan Decker, our personal robot overlord, and the rest of the PC Gamer crew, I'm Evan Lottie. Thanks again for listening this week, guys. See you in 7 days.